coalition forces have begun striking selected targets of military importance.
It would be a decision which could only be taken once.
There's no argument over the choice between peace and war.
Unconfirmed reports about Gaddafi being captured.
This morning, I want to talk about the future of Europe.
Burning Point.
Hello and welcome to the show with me, Ekaterina Kudashkina. As US and China continue to compete in the Asia-Pacific, Beijing steps up its charm offensive. Speaking at the opening of the APEC finance ministers meeting held in Beijing on the 22nd of October, Chinese Vice Premier Zhang Gaoli said China is willing to work with various economic bodies and take steps towards regional integration and sustainable development. He said, and I quote, "We're willing to take on a broader horizon and take resolute steps to strengthen reform and innovation for mutual benefit and win-win cooperation." The finance meeting was originally slated to be held in Hong Kong, but was moved to Beijing as Hong Kong protests have escalated. US has made itself clear it was supporting the protesters, obviously irritating Beijing weeks before President Obama's long-anticipated visit to that country. In fact, the US has been sending mixed signals in its relations with China, its closest trade partner, and at the same time its largest competitor. So what exactly is the US strategy in China? And this is something we are discussing with our guest speaker, Dr. O.I. Soon, senior fellow at the S. Rajaratnam School of International Studies.
I think the United States has a very mixed attitude towards China. On the one hand, because the economic situation in the United States is still not quite picking up, whereas that in China, it's still going full steam ahead. So, of course, the United States would like to benefit from some of the economic cooperation with China in trade and in investment and so on. But on the other hand, I think the U.S. is still very keen on pushing some of its traditional concerns. For example, concerns on human rights, concerns on this with respect to China, the rise of China and the increasing assertiveness of China in the Asia-Pacific area. So when you see these two sides of the United States playing out against each other, sometimes you have very confusing message.
Do I get it right that one of particular concerns of the United States is the currency situation in the region?
Traditionally, the U.S. dollars have been used as the so-called currency of settlement for international trade. But increasingly in the Asia-Pacific area, especially between China and some Southeast Asian countries such as Malaysia and Singapore and various other countries, you see that increasingly the China currency renminbi has been been used as the currency for settlement. So in the long run, of course, this is going to diminish the important role played by the U.S. In terms of having a larger say in the international trading system. But on the other hand, I think the U.S. Now has to really focus on reviving its own economy, because without doing so, it will be very difficult to persuade the rest of the world to continue to follow its economic leadership.
And how do you think the U.S. might react to that currency threat? Do you think that the current government, the current administration, is likely to resort to some kind of aggressive action to suppress this trend?
Well, I think this has been going on since quite some time. And as far as I could remember, back in 2008, I was even interviewed about the use of renminbi as a settlement currency, for example. The United States over these years, of course, would like to not see that sort of settlement activities prosper. But I think it doesn't quite help, because individual countries which have large volumes of trade with China, increasingly they are using the renminbi to settle with China in terms of bilateral trade. In terms of multilateral trade, for example, if there are some raw materials, let's say it goes from Southeast Asian countries to China for partial processing, and then finally to the United States for final assembly and so on. That kind of a multilateral type of trade, the U.S. dollars is still very much the currency for settlement.
So getting back to Mr. Obama's visit to China, what are the expectations in Beijing, and what are the expectations in the region?
Well, the expectations for the region would, of course, be that the United States and China, these two superpowers in the region, would not play their proxy game in the region by means of using their respective client states in, for example, duking it out in South China Sea or in East China Sea and so on, because that obviously destabilizes the region and thereby is not conducive for economic development. On the other hand, I think in terms of both the United States and China, I think at this point in time, both sides are also looking forward to stress upon those areas where they could cooperate. For example, one very obvious area where they could cooperate with each other would be anti-terrorism, because it's not only the recent outburst of this ISIS in the Middle East. In China, for example, you also see restlessness in the western part of China, in the Xinjiang region, and also various acts of terrorism in various parts of China. So these two countries, as well as other countries in the region, they share a lot of concerns for the widespread terrorist activities in the region.
Dr. Oh, thank you so much. And just to remind you, our guest speaker was Dr. Oh Ai-soon, Senior Fellow at the S. Rajaratnam School of International Studies. This is Burning Point. We're discussing U.S. strategy in China. And we are proceeding to discuss the issue with our next guest speaker, Dr. Ron Yuskin, Senior Fellow at Strategic and Defense Studies Center in the School of International Political and Strategic Studies in Australia.
It's, as this interview suggests, it's perhaps the most consequential bilateral relationship in the world at the present time. It's a very complex one, and I think it's fair to say an increasingly antagonistic one. If you look back, say, over the last 5 or 6 years, there's no surprise whatsoever that Washington would be supportive of the thrust of the complaints of the Hong Kong protesters. I mean, this is an understanding that Beijing gave when it took Hong Kong back. It's pro-democracy and so on. The United States cannot do anything other than be supportive without being interfering, if you like, to advise Beijing to talk to the protesters, try to accommodate their concerns, and urge them, of course, not to crack down in any hard way, which make it harder for the U.S. not to respond also in a harder way. But I think that's the Hong Kong question is indicative of the difficulties, if you like, between two countries that are so vastly different in their practices of governance, as well as, of course, culture and historical traditions and so on. But certainly when Obama travels to China this time, it already seems a very long time since President Xi went to California and to Sunnylands there and that famous casual summit. It is more than 12 months, but even so, so much has happened, so much has got harder. And the biggest question, I think, I suspect that will be on Obama's agenda was what he can do to improve the climate between Tokyo and Beijing. I think that relationship has become so icy and so lacking in even normal communication that it's quite troubling. And because it's a major U.S. ally, the United States could not avoid direct involvement in any significant further deterioration in relations between Japan and China.
But when we're talking about the Washington's involvement, well, okay, if we talk about Hong Kong, I understand that this issue is painful. Now there are disputed islands, and that issue is painful for China either. But like you are saying, the relations have been deteriorating so fast. Where is it going to take or the United States? Because as far as I understand, China is prepared for a long confrontation. They don't seem to be as vulnerable as the U.S. seems to be. Or is my vision wrong?
No, I think that would be a very insightful comment and a very correct one, particularly with respect to East Asia, of course. That is China's neighborhood. They're close to all those scenes of difficulty and confrontation. The United States is an ocean away. So the tools it has available to shape events as they unfold are much more indirect than those available to China. And as we've just seen yet again, whenever the U.S. needs and wants to play close attention to East Asia, something comes up, typically in the Persian Gulf region, but in recent times also vis-a-vis Russia and the Ukraine and so on, that suck all of its attention away from China, Japan, and the Western Pacific. And that's happened again now with ISIS, partly Ukraine, partly ISIS. It's hard to measure these things. You know, the U.S. has been a global power for a long time. They can do many things at once. But the fact is that, like any system, they have a handful of people at the very top who have to make final decisions on the big issues. And if the big questions that they're wrestling with at the moment concern how far do we go in assisting the Iraqis and how do we operate in Syria and so on, if that's soaking up all their time, they're not being as thoughtful as perhaps they should be about East Asian affairs.
But is it that they have suddenly, or perhaps not so suddenly, decided to revise their strategy in that part of the world? The reason I'm asking is, I'm sure you remember that several years ago, there's been a lot of speculation that at the times of Kissinger, U.S. has been making serious attempts to engage China, and nothing seems to be indicating that China is or has been reluctant to develop its ties with the U.S. So what happened to U.S.?
Again, I think there's a lot of truth in that. And the essence, a complicated answer, I think, and maybe more complicated than I can possibly give. But one big factor there is that the last decade or so, China has witnessed the United States, which under George Bush back in 2001, before September 11, made it clear that the United States was going to manage or develop and manage its relationship with China very carefully. And from the point of view that China was a potential adversary of the United States. And then the U.S. watched 9/11 happen. They watched the U.S. make that horrible bungle over Iraq, sort of a political, economic, and military bungle. Then the global financial crisis. So within less than 10 years, they're confronting a Washington which seemed to be prepared to ensure that Beijing's revival would be not at the cost of U.S. interests, to the United States that was an entirely different power by the time the Obama administration came in, a much diminished power, not just with an economy in a bad shape, but a country that no longer commanded the sort of respect and admiration and trust of the rest of the world to the degree that it had for so long. Now, Obama's done a lot to fix that, but he still has an economy which is quite shaky. The U.S. now faces the certainty that China will, in the next 10 years, become the largest single economy in the world, and therefore more able to do more things even than the United States. So the assessments in Beijing, I think, just in less than a decade, would have switched to at least we need to be very accommodative of the United States. Our economic growth depends very much on them. They're a much more powerful state than us, so we don't want to have any trouble with them. Now I think Beijing is thinking, well, if things are important to us, we can push. And if necessary, we can push the Americans away or aside. So a very different mindset, I think, prevails in the two capitals. If you can imagine Obama's visit in November 2014 and, say, George Bush going to China sometime in the early 2000s.
Sarah, thank you so much. And just to remind you, this time our guest speaker was Dr. Ron Huskin, Senior Fellow at Strategic and Defense Studies Center in the School of International, Political and Strategic Studies in Australia. Well, and with this, we end this edition of Burning Point, brought to you by me, Ekaterina Kudoshkina. Thank you so much for staying with us. Goodbye, and take care.